I guess to begin with, we'd like to ask you why you saw the need, felt the need, and felt the opportunity to start your own polling firm back in 1980. What drew you to that, and did you feel like you were taking a pretty big risk as you did that?
Well, any time that you change ventures, you're taking a risk. I was at Utah State as a director of the Bureau of Government and Opinion Research, and we did research there, and I left Utah State in 1980 and had an opportunity to go with and do surveys for the Deseret News. In those days, they did them at least monthly. But I also became an adjunct professor at the University of Utah and taught a class or two each semester. And I could not have done it without Pat. Because Pat really brought into a real new element, and that was focus groups. And focus groups became very, very popular. And she became a master, not only as a moderator, but what questions should be asked to the participants. And that was the qualitative data. And I was in charge of the quantitative data of Dan Jones and Associates. We would not have made it, though, without Diane Meppen and Brent Ellis and others in our organization. We were not out to make a lot of profit. We were truly a non-profit organization. But we were accurate, and we were absolutely honest. And I'd like Pat to say how she felt in 1980 at the new venture, because she had worked so hard. Well, I was at Utah State, and we did consulting work for another organization called Wasatch Opinion with Ray Briscoe and Jim Mayfield. But it was time to move on, and without her, I could not have moved on.
Well, first of all, let me thank the Utah Foundation for this wonderful award. What a tremendous opportunity for us, and we're very grateful. As we got up this morning, Dan said to me, I wonder why they're doing this for us. I mean, there's so many worthy people out there, and all of you sitting in this room mean a lot to us over the years. So many great friends here. I think in 1980, it was great timing for this kind of a business, because we were starting to morph from doing door-to-door, face-to-face interviews to going more telephone. And so it became more accessible, research became more accessible to companies. And the more we got into it, it was very exciting. I know personally, I've done research anywhere from ice cream to roads to public policy, you name it. It seems like there isn't any kind of topic that we haven't done research on. So it does make you a little more interesting as you're talking to people, you know, just enough to be dangerous about a lot of different issues. And many of you in this room I have conducted research for. But I think it was a great opportunity. And, you know, Dan, I can honestly say there isn't a person that has the gut that he does, especially for politics, as he really understands it. Sometimes people can read information, but he in his gut knows what it is, and he can tell if it's right or wrong. And he never did anything unethical. There were numerous calls to our homes when we would do surveys, for instance, for politicians or companies, and people would try and worm information out of him, and he never did it. He was always ethical, and I knew that that was important in our business.
So let's talk about facts, you know, those stubborn things. When you determine them, the people, even those who have hired you, are not always happy to hear them. And I'm wondering if you could tell us a story about a client who was resistant to the facts as you determined them, and what may have happened as a result.
Well, we worked very closely with a sponsor here, Zions, and they have been very, very helpful in working, especially with Scott Anderson and others, and I really appreciate Harris Simmons and for his support. But I also have worked very, very closely with Intermountain Healthcare. If we had not got the contract with Intermountain Healthcare, you see, they do polling every single night but Sunday of patients and really listen to it and take the evaluations of their physicians, of their hospital care, and how people feel about the entire medical program that they have. I also have had an opportunity to work with R&R Advertising and very closely with Bob Henry. And he is probably one of the sharpest individuals I've ever worked in the political arena. And thank you to those three organizations for being here and help sponsoring and to go along with us. You were mentioning, Pat said, that I have guts, but I haven't heard from Donald Trump yet. And I understand we're both about as politically correct as each other. And I'm not really mad about Donald Trump because he hasn't really done anything. I understand he's going to become the ambassador to Mexico, but I also do take my polling very seriously, and I want to thank those who used it, who had the faith and knew that they were going to get the research. Now, some used research and some discredited it and discarded it, but we have enjoyed the long ride that we've had. And I enjoyed that opportunity of writing also with the Hinckley Institute, Jane Nelson, and others that have been involved with us.
Well, turning to politics in the trenches in elected office, Pat, you once told me, and you can disclaim this now if you'd like, but I remember you telling me that you didn't see working in the Utah Senate as a Democrat as a disadvantage. And I'm interested in some examples of what Democrats were able to accomplish as a result of your unique point of view and your leadership.
Well, you know, it was very risky for me to run as a Democrat because we had, in our business, had done research for so many Republican politicians, in fact, almost exclusively, although we did some of Matheson's work and Jan Graham and some others. But it was a great, it was a risk for me to run, but I felt like someone needed to represent the majority, and I thought it was important that we needed more balance in our political system here. But it was an advantage being a Democrat serving in the legislature. Number one, you have many more opportunities for leadership. I never was told how to vote. I loved that. I appreciated that I could vote my conscience, and oftentimes it did run counter to how the rest of my colleagues voted, but they represented different areas than I did. But I felt a freedom there, freedom to comment, which is very important. And so when I hear people say that you can't do anything as a Democrat in the legislature, I think it's just blatantly false. I just think it's important to, number one, get along with people, go out of your way. For instance, when I would go sit in my committees, I would make it a point to sit by my Republican colleagues. I respect them very, very much, and I have many great friends who are Republicans. And I don't look at them as labels. I look at them as individuals and people who are doing their best job representing their areas. And so it was a great experience for me. It's one that you don't hear very many positive things about, but in my current job, I'm urging women to get more involved in politics. It's extremely important to do that.
Tell us about that training program at Women's Leadership Institute.
The Women's Leadership Institute was founded, actually, the founding sponsor was Zions Bank. and a group of people at Zions Bank, specifically Scott Anderson and Lori Chillingworth and some others, felt that Utah was not being very well served in how it was portrayed, both in-state and out-of-state. And so I was asked to be the CEO of the Women's Leadership Institute as I left the career at Dan Jones & Associates and also the Senate, with two missions. One mission was to get more women in politics, and the other mission was to get more women in senior level positions in organizations and on corporate boards. And what a wonderful experience. We have some of our board members here. We have half of our board is men. And that has been so important in moving this forward, is that men advocating for women in elevating women to senior level positions. And we have loved the insight of our male colleagues in helping us. The other thing is that it's great for business, wonderful for business. It's return on your ROI, your reputation, the reputation of your company. And so it's not just the nice thing to do, but it's the smart thing to do. So that's what we're doing, is we have a political development series starting next week. We also have a corporate development series, which will help women and train them coming up. So what a wonderful opportunity.
All right. Dan, you have had some things to say in the past about the current divisive climate in politics. Is it really worse than it ever was, the way you see it?
I found 1972 very divisive. When George McGovern got the nomination, and in 1973, in the abortion case in Roe versus Wade, that Utah really turned. And then in 74, with Jake Garn winning as a mayor of Salt Lake for the United States Senate, and then Orrin Hatch won in 1976. But the Democrats continued to elect Cal Rampton and Scott Matheson. And I've had the opportunity to serve every governor as their pollster since Scott Matheson. But today, at the local level and within the legislature and with other organizations, I find much more divisive over almost every kind of issue. And that is why Utah now is one of the lowest states in turning out. It has one of the lowest in voting. And I don't care if you vote, go and fill out a paper or put it on a machine or you mail it in. You should exercise your right to tell the leaders every level at the federal, the state, county, and the local level of how you feel and what kind of a government you want. And I say to those that are on extreme ends of both sides, you're not doing us any favor. You are not really representing the United States in the direction of the men that you quote when you quote Jefferson and Madison and Washington. Get back to the real America.
Dan,
one of our questions from the audience, and Pat, you may care to weigh in on this as well. Do you see that trend toward extremism as the biggest threat to democracy in the United States?
You know, I wanted to say, this is why he was such a great teacher, motivating his students, and he feels very passionate about it. I have to say that I have appreciated so many times, as we raised our children at home, that our family was not allowed at the dinner table to criticize our government or our president. And how would that be if at the dinner table of every home in America today, that we were looking for the good things in our government and the good things in our political leaders? How different would the tone be today, where we can be constructive and asking our children, how would you solve the homeless problem? How would you solve the roads and the many issues that we're dealing with every day, health care, and what are the things we're thankful for. And that was one of the benefits of living in a home with Dan Jones, is we did those kinds of things with our family. And I think to this day, you don't hear the kind of divisiveness as we get together with our family. When people say, what can we do to change that? We can start in our own homes, in our own conversations, around the water cooler. Watch what we say. Are we contributing to the good of America and building strong people to become good leaders? I think that's a lesson we could all learn from Dan.
Well, let me take a twist on what you just said. You have a large family. You have seven
yes.
children, and at this point, 31 grandchildren, great-grandchildren?
Yep. I think I've lost count.
I think that's what you told me here a couple
yes,
of weeks ago.
As of 2 weeks ago.
But
yeah.
With that big family, how were you able to manage their needs through the years as you built your business? I mean, that also, of course, took a lot of your time. Do you have any lessons the rest of us could learn in managing family and the business that you built?
Well, I think it's because each one, we showed respect for their opinion. We also encourage them to be participants and to be gladiators, not just spectators. We also taught them the importance of the United States Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and the many documents that we have today to show leadership. And the United States was ranked recently 15th as a nation to live in. I say, let's change that. Let's become number one nation to live and make our children and their children feel great, to feel America is the best and will be there to protect nations and hungry people and people searching for the right of life and democracy. I ask that you participate and get out and get involved. Not only vote, you run for office and try what it's like. And I also found out, talking this way, that SOB doesn't mean short of breath, but I've also learned that Pat practices what she preaches, that she loves government, and she's a good grandma. And when my daughters come over with their children, I'm out. Forget it. And she provides so much for a home where each individual's rights are respected, and each one knows that they're important, and that she also makes me feel important and necessary, and she also shows great respect to her mother, who is 93 and knows more about government than I do. And that, my twin sister and my family, we were always taught to respect our government. We are a good nation, but we can become greater. And I ask you to become part of it.
Dan, I'd like to add on to answer your question. You know, it was difficult when we first started in 1980, our business. We had a one-year-old, barely one-year-old, and a three-year-old, and we were commuting from Logan. So every day we would drive down and you know, getting child care that could help us at that time. It was a big risk setting up business. We had a son who has a disability. As he grew and, you know, working and doing all the things we're doing, I would stay up many nights with him because he has OCD, and he would have to make sure that every Word, he'd write an essay. In those days, they didn't use the computers, but I remember he would write it, and if it wasn't just perfect, he'd have to start over again. And so there were many nights that were long nights, making sure that the homework was done and that everything was done correctly and that he would feel good about it, with our other children too. So I think every family has their challenges and their issues. But what I'd like to say, especially to women, is that you can do more than one thing. You know, you don't have to just be a stay-at-home. You can be other things, too. You don't have to just work. You can do many things together. And this is one of the challenges we face in the Women's Leadership Institute, is helping women understand that you can do more than one thing, and you can do it well. And there are just specific roles for men or women, that you just work it out together and that you can accomplish great things and build a great family. We have a merged family. They all love each other. We get along beautifully together. It will be 40 years this week that we will have been married. And they're all of our kids are very different. They love doing different things. They're all very active physically. They're very competitive. We do a lot of fun things together. We spend a lot of time together. But the one thing that was helpful for us is working in the same business is when we first started, we would go together to meet with a client, and the client would almost always just look at Dan and ask him the questions about the research, and he would say, "Ask her, she wrote it." And I've always appreciated that. You know, we started that way, and then we kind of moved doing different things in our company. But he was always very respectful and rewarded the things that I did. And that is so important in both a marriage and in a business.
I am not retired from polling. I work every day, and I work with Utah Policy, LeVar Webb, Bob Burnick, Mr. Schott, and we work hard and put out a monthly survey for Utah and Idaho. And I ask you to read those because we try to really present the issues the way they are. And it's a lot of hard work. And polling is done at Cicero through Dan Jones and Associates. But they are great guys to work with, and I really appreciate the opportunity.
Okay, I am afraid that our time is running out here, and I really have time for only one more question. And I have several really good ones, okay? But I think there's one that, two more questions, okay. This is a technical question in the polling business, but nobody has a home phone anymore. How do you get the sample that you need, and how do you reach people in the right set of demographics so that you have a valid sample?
Well, that's a very good question, but there are organizations that sell cell phone numbers. But what you do to really get a random sample, you get the prefix, then you draw the next four numbers at large, that every number has an equal opportunity. Then you spend at least a half hour explaining to the person you're talking to how in the heck you got their number. So it is more difficult today, it is. We also have them be able to fill out through postcards and online. And so most of your surveys today, about 60% of the interviews are done on telephone, including cell phone. And 40% are done online, and where people will send in the answers. It is much more difficult today. And what we're really trying to get involved are young people, because they really don't really get involved because they don't have land phones and so forth. But you can also see it. they don't vote either. So we got to find a way to get them involved.
And I have to remind him that we're not young, but we don't have a landline either.
Okay, finally.
She just thinks that, but anyway.
Finally, and maybe I should address this to Pat because you worked on this so diligently in the legislature. Will the state of Utah, do you believe, develop the political will to spend a sufficient amount on education to get the results it wants?
Yes, I think we will because we're, you know, I did work on that issue for about 12 years in the legislature. I knew that as it was written, the bill was written, it wouldn't pass. But I think what it did
and
is
you're
it,
talking about the Jones-Mascaro.
And then it morphed over some other things. But I still think it's the best plan out there, and I'm hoping that people will pick it up to bring in $500 million a year without raising taxes and have it directed directly to the schools. I think once people understand, I think there's a chasm between our elected leaders and the will of the people. I felt very comfortable sponsoring that bill because I had done so much research out in the hinterlands and in all of Utah to understand that people are willing to spend more money if it ends up in the classroom and they can see a meaningful difference there. And so I felt very comfortable with that. That is still the case, by the way. And I think it will happen because our state is doing so well on so many measures that we literally have to look at greater funding, but directing it, targeting it into certain areas and raising teacher salaries and making teaching a profession that is valued and rewarded commensurately.
Well, I'm afraid, are out of time for this, but don't go away because there's much left to do here.